In this episode, I speak to Marisa Vash, one of the leading Shibari artists who offers a unique perspective on this intimate, sensual art of rope, which is often associated with BDSM. Shibari is a Japanese art form that has been predominantly practiced by men. Yet, Marie's feminine approach has given this art a fresh perspective, making rope feel more approachable to a wider audience, especially to women. At Feel, we work with Marie to share this art and create elegant, sensual events focused on intimacy, depth of human connection, and sensual exploration of rope as a device for healing and surrender. If you want to learn more specifically about Marie's approach to Shibari, head to our previous conversation in the first episode of the Feminine Power Podcast, because in this episode, we focus on Marie's personal journey of healing and personal growth. In the past 2 years, Marie has made a commitment to her healing, development of self-love, and expansion of her potential. She worked with healers, learned hypnosis, and delved into the world of Tantra and transformed her body, mind, energy, and her life. Learn and get inspired by her journey in this episode. For us women, it is possible to have it all and embody our truth and power in all areas of life. Feminine Power Podcast is your guide to reconnecting with your feminine essence, reclaiming your power, and rising into your fullest potential. I'm your host, Maria Grinina, co-founder of Feel, the feminine embodiment platform. And here on this podcast, I interview our expert community and our members, and we together share transformative tools, intimate conversations, and embodiment practices, bringing you a wealth of wisdom and practical tools to support your journey. Follow this podcast for your weekly inspiration. And if you'd like to go deeper into your embodiment journey and the awakening of your sexual energy, check out our online membership linked in this podcast description. I am very excited to record this podcast with you because you've done just so much really, really powerful work. Not everyone can go through the hardship of hard work necessary to make a beautiful life.
I'm very appreciative that we're having this conversation because I think that this topic is really important. And I actually am going to start a TikTok about some of the things I've learned in the last couple years about mindfulness and mental health, because I went on a deep dive in the last 2 years of my life that was transformative in a very positive way.
Yeah. Okay, so actually, let's then start with this journey. Would you like to share with me, how did you start this deep dive into mindfulness and presence? What happened?
I moved to Europe almost 4.5 or 5 years ago, right in the midst of COVID. And it was the first time that I moved somewhere totally on my own without the support of the people that I grew up with, and started my own business. I started Marie Sauvage Production in Paris when I moved to Paris a couple years ago. And I went through some very intense learning curves. Yes. And what I mean by that is pacing myself with work, having boundaries with my work ethic, having boundaries with other people, learning how to communicate, valuing myself in my work, valuing myself in how much money I make, valuing my health over my work, because I would push myself so hard. I put my work and my success over my health and my well-being, because I thought that that was the most paramount thing in my life. To the point where I started breaking down and breaking down and breaking down. And I had to turn things around.
Now, as you've gathered so much knowledge about yourself and learned so much about where all these ideas come from, would you be open to share what do you think why did you need to work so hard? Like, why did you put that over everything else? Why did you think that was so important?
It was the way that I was conditioned in my childhood. My family, particularly my father, he's a French immigrant, and he instilled in himself that he must succeed at all costs, which he did. He's very successful in the business that he chose, and he went to Cornell, which is a Ivy League school, and he ended up being like one of the best hotel directors in the world. And growing up with someone like that, he instilled in me that I must be the best at no matter what I do. And he was very harsh about that. And if that's coming from your family, that validation comes with success. And I wanted my parents' validation so much, I equated success with love.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing it. So what happened after the burnout? What's been your first initiation into the connection to self?
Just being angry, tired, exhausted, you know, sleeping for hours and hours at a time after going on work benders. I just realized that I couldn't continue like that anymore. And I wasn't actually enjoying my life, even though I really love what I do, because Shibari is my passion and I'm very happy that I found this and it gives me a sense of purpose. But the way that I was going about it was depreciating the quality of my life.
Yeah, and I definitely believe we can do an incredible work and serve people in the best possible way when we actually take care of ourselves. And I can see that when I work with people, you can feel when they feel genuinely good, when they feel genuinely taken care of, then they just give so much more, right? We can't give much when we don't have our cup filled. I love what you do, and I want to see more and more and more of it. And I hope that you will continue this beautiful self-care journey you started. And also you've started sharing so much about it and sharing this inspiration with us so that we can know how important it is. How does your self-care work now then? And how does your balance look like now?
I can break it down into a few parts of like how it happened. First, it started with eliminating alcohol and drugs. So I decided that I was going to give my body a complete break from any sort of substances. And that also includes food, because not only some people drink when they're stressed or do drugs when they go out, but they eat. And that's, I think, like a silent addiction that people don't really talk about, and they think it's kind of cute, but to me it's in the same category. And when I was stressed, I would eat and eat and eat. And so I went to therapy, and I even went to some support groups in Paris, and I met people who were going through the same struggles, and I learned a lot about emotional management. And this was incredible, because before that, I felt like I went through a really big emotional growth spurt going to these support groups, because I learned about tools of how you can manage your emotions. Like, for example, say you are really anxious about a presentation or a show, and then you just stop in a store and you get like a chocolate bar or something. Instead of doing that, just take a deep breath and you think, do I really need this right now? Am I actually hungry? How would I feel in 20 minutes after I ate this? How would I feel tomorrow? How would my stomach feel? I started to ask myself these questions about everything I was ingesting. And at first it was very hard, because your body your brain is trained to want that and to be soothed by that. But over a year and a half, the question started to be calmer, and my no and also like my resolve started to be also calmer. And what I mean by that is like I wouldn't feel stressed that I would resist things. Like I don't feel like I'm resisting things anymore, which is a really beautiful feeling.
Yeah, and something that Dantra teaches so well, right? accepting and letting things sink in, even if they are, we can label them negative or difficult or different. But instead of resisting, just actually seeing and feeling them and allowing them to alchemize and change. If we take it in this more conscious way, we can learn so much about how we treat our body temple.
What I appreciate about the philosophy of Tantra is in January, actually, I decided I would learn more about Tantra. So I went to a workshop by a student of Manta Chia.
Mm-hmm.
And in this workshop, I had learned that the essence of Tantra is to be present with yourself.
Yeah.
Because when you're present with your emotions and you really feel what your emotions and your body is telling you, even if it's uncomfortable, you can let go of the negativity. And when you let go of the negativity, you can allow peace and even positivity to affect you.
Yeah.
Because when you numb yourself and when you look for external things to avoid your internal self, then you never actually go through those processes that allow you to let go of all that negativity. And that's something that I didn't quite understand before I went on this journey.
Yeah.
And that I was afraid of the negativity. I was afraid to face myself. Like, instead of thinking, okay, take a deep breath. It's okay to be nervous. It's okay to have these negative feelings. I say, no, I want to eat macaroni and cheese right now. But even though those feelings were so uncomfortable, the more I faced them, the more that they lost their shadow.
Yeah.
And they became smaller and smaller and less significant to the point that I don't feel them at all anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is so incredible.
Yeah. And this is one thing that when I learned this about you, it gave me a huge amount of respect and faith that you really can do the shadow work. Like, there are things that I share with people only when I feel like there is a possibility they could understand. And this teacher that you've just seen, I don't share her with most people, because most people would never be able to take it in what the work that she does with people. I would love, actually, I thought we'll speak about it at the end of the podcast, but the theme of shadow work really comes in now. If you are open, I would love to deep dive into the truth of the shadow work. What was it like for you to really look into your darkness and pain through various experiences you've had over the last year, various retreats and deep dive one-on-one that you've done recently with this incredible teacher in England, who also transformed my life massively. And I find her work quite hard. And I have had people who did not ever speak to me after I introduced them to her because they didn't find it soft enough. But you like totally incredibly embraced it, because I knew you can look into your shadow. So talk to me about shadow work, please. What did you do and what did you learn?
There's a beautiful quote that I hold close to my heart now, and it's something like, pain is a portal for transformation. Pain is like a portal of ascension, even. And I think that before I really dive deep into the shadow work, I was afraid to look at myself. And then after these experiences, I realized that looking at yourself and looking at your past and your shadow, it's almost like you're looking away from the shadow and it seems like a big monster behind you. But then when you turn around, it's actually like a little chihuahua.
Yeah.
And when you look at it, you realize that it's just a part of you that needs attention, that needs some love. And there's so much that you can grow into if you allow yourself the space to do that. In this particular workshop, which I found to be the most powerful one that I had done in this year, this, how would you even describe her, like teacher or mentor? She said she likes to be as anonymous as possible, but I really appreciated that her approach was very simple. And I think that's the beauty of shadow work, is that it doesn't have to be something so complicated. It can simply just be a beautiful conversation with a compassionate person who has a good vision of you, or just that you sit down without your phone for a week and you write in a journal and you really examine yourself and you take a quiet moment, because that, I think that was the best part of this experience, was just that I didn't have my phone. Yeah. And I, as an influencer, you know, 200,000 followers, I'm always on my phone. I'm always answering hundreds of messages every day, and my brain is scrambled, and I never really get to think deeply about how is my body feeling? How is my soul feeling? And I realized that I need to take time at least once a week, maybe one day, where I just don't have my phone and I ask myself those questions. How am I feeling? How is my body? How's my heart? And give myself the time to connect. I think the greatest realization that I had was connected to what I just previously spoke about, that I had this inclination my whole life to grab something external to soothe myself. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, having a drink after a shibari show, or if I'm nervous, eating like some candy or some chips or something.
Yeah.
And when I was writing about my life, I pinpoint when this started in my life. Mm. And this was so powerful, because I realized that this emotion that has stayed with me my entire life, which has now become like a background emotion that wasn't attached to a specific memory. It was like an emotion that was begging to be noticed or acknowledged. And so it just kept feeding it with things outside of myself, when all I really had to do was just sit down and write about my life and go back to that place and comfort that little girl who needed comfort, because at that point she felt so lost and so unloved in that moment, that there was a moment of despair, that it was almost like a fragmentation of the soul. And that's where that addictive, you know, void started in me.
Yeah.
Knowing where that comes from, I feel like I can now emotionally and spiritually and logically be able to confront my behaviors in the present, without me having to resist, because it's not about resisting, because now I know where that's coming from. So I can tell myself, you can calm down, you're safe, you are loved, you are no longer that little girl who needed, you know, who had that void.
Mm. Is that what you do now when you're nervous?
Yeah, I realized that is what happened to me when I was younger, when I wasn't receiving the love and was feeling neglected at that moment. I don't have to identify with that anymore.
What else do you do these days to soothe yourself, or in moments of stress or, accelerated nervous system in you?
I have a few tricks now. Like a week ago, I got really frustrated about a work-related thing with my website. And I noticed that sometimes I get quick to anger. And I thought, you know what? Everything is going to work out. Mm. Just take a breath and go outside. It's a beautiful day. You're in London. It's amazing. I don't know, like, just take a walk, go to sleep, and tomorrow the issue will be fixed. And yes, the issue was fixed. Just stopping myself when I'm getting it on that like train of like heightened emotions, stop, take a break. Or if I feel my body tensing, I do what I call body scan now. And I breathe and I go through all my body parts and I feel if there's tension, like if I feel tension in my jaw or in my stomach, and I breathe into those places. Mm-hmm. And I just take a moment, maybe I put some like nature sounds on, or I walk in the park if there's a park. And I just breathe. I really just breathe and I feel myself. And I feel what is that tension trying to tell me. Yeah. And I do this now all day even.
Yeah. Do you have a daily practice that you do?
This is my secret. but this has changed my life so much. I did a retreat with David Mears on the topic of hypnosis, which I found really informative and very powerful. And I realized just how powerful our subconscious is. And since April, he had hypnotized me to stop smoking. And now I cannot even smell cigarette smells. It just absolutely disgusts me. And I'm completely convinced that hypnosis is a powerful tool that can work on anyone if you allow it to. Yeah. And since then, I started listening to these subliminal tapes on YouTube about making more money, about finding love, about self-confidence. And it has really changed my life and the way that I see myself and I talk to myself, how I look at myself in the mirror. I effortlessly am talking to myself like I am a goddess. And, and it feels amazing.
If you are resonating with this episode and you are ready to take your embodiment journey to the next level, I invite you to join the Feel membership, your guide on a journey of reconnecting with and embodying the power of your feminine energy. As a member, you'll get access to the daily embodiment practices created by our powerful experts and become a part of our community. Knowledge that you receive on this podcast is gold, but the real change happens when you integrate these learnings into your life. With our online membership, you can cultivate a consistent self-love and embodiment practice to nurture your energy. Our members are experiencing profound shifts from healing past traumas to reigniting their sensual fire to manifesting their wildest dreams. And we want that for you too. So if you are feeling the call to go deeper, check this podcast description for the link to join our membership.
I wonder, you just touched on the topic of money. How did your relationship with money change over the last few years?
That's also an interesting topic because that relates to self-worth. And I always had this correlation that I need to work very, very hard to make a lot of money or even to deserve having money. And I'm realizing that that's not so necessary. And what I mean by that is you can choose the type of work and the clients that you work with. And that can dictate the way that you create or you generate money. So it's just that I started to select a different way of working and working with different clientele and just making my life a lot easier and giving my time to rest.
And as you did so, did the amount of money increase or decrease?
Increased. Also, just being able to give myself the permission to ask for money that I deserved. And that was, you know, you think that you want money and you think that you want to make a lot of money. But when the client is there who's able to provide you that certain income that you want, sometimes I would have panic attacks. I'd go, oh my God, do I really deserve $10,000 for this, you know, installation? Could I really deliver? And I delivered perfectly. I was freaking out. I was even ignoring the emails. Yes, I feel like there's also some part of you that needs to expand financially. It's like a financial expansion to feel yourself, to feel the shoes of someone who can make more money. You have to envision that you deserve it and that you can have the capacity to hold it. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Have you had any hypnosis on the money theme?
I listened to hypnosis tapes from YouTube, actually, on money.
Yay. All right. Yes. I'll take this on as well.
I will send them to you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's hard to find those that I really like. So please do. We can link them in this podcast episode as well.
Yes.
Are there any commitments you've made to yourself to ensure that you can always have this beautiful relationship with money?
Well, right now I'm working on scaling my business. And by scaling my business, I would like to create more ways that people can access my material, not just by meeting me one-on-one, but also finding my material online. So I'm making an online database on Shibari, Tantra, and hypnosis, which I just put online a week ago, which is very exciting.
Yeah, your lessons look so beautiful and aesthetic. So I definitely recommend to people listening, checking out the lessons. I'm sure a lot of people who couldn't, you know, physically be at your events can now have this amazing access. Talk to me about Tantra. You are creating some tantric resources as well at the moment?
Yes, I've been studying Tantra and going to retreats this year and finding that there is some correlation between Tantra and Shibari, and they're beneficial to each other.
Yeah.
There was something, there was a retreat that I went to that I wanted to talk about called Issa. And
yeah,
I found that was also very beneficial for my self-growth as well.
Yes. Tell me more about Issa.
Personally, what I found most important about Issa was their work on boundaries. And in many tantric workshops, boundaries is a very big topic. And boundaries is so important because boundaries allows you to preserve your sense of self-worth and your energy and allow you to be present only when you are 100% really into the situation.
Yeah.
Which, as a chronic people pleaser, as I was in the past, I struggled with this. I wanted to please everyone and say yes to everyone. When I was in events, I would want to tie everyone because I really wanted everyone to have an amazing experience and experience Shibari. And I wanted to do, basically, I just wanted to please everyone. And in the end, I ended up depleted all the time.
Yeah.
And that's not good for you. And I'm like, I was thinking to myself, why am I so bent on pleasing everyone but not myself? Why am I not giving myself the time to rest, the time to say no, the time to do what I really love? It's an interesting question to ask yourself. You think you're doing good by saying yes to everyone, but actually you're not doing good because it's not actually authentic to say yes to everyone when you're not doing the best for yourself in those moments.
How did they teach this kind of concept of boundaries?
There was a few exercises, but yeah, some of them had to do with you partnered with another person in the group and you would have to ask the partner if they were okay with a certain kind of touch or an invitation, and you would say yes or no, which
yeah,
is easy when you're in those workshops. But then when you're free flowing, like in the temple night, then you really have to say yes or no in an authentic way, because that can really dictate the way that your night flows.
Yeah. No, I'm finding this exercise extremely powerful, even in the context of workshop. And I believe everyone should experience this kind of workshop, because indeed, it is easy to say yes or no when you are in the setting of a workshop and it's literally the rule of what is going on right now. But I'm finding in my experience when I have this kind of exercise for myself, practicing yes or no with the other person, with active communication and touch, I just feel in my body what I feel when I say no. And this teaches my body to remember this sensation. And also with time allows me to get more comfortable, even with the act of my tongue and my mouth making this sound no, while looking into the eyes of the other person and connecting to my body at the same time. I feel like this is a simple skill development process, which we really don't have in our lives. We don't train this enough. And in this kind of setting, when we learn, we still are way more likely to then transfer it into our real play engagement, temple nights, or work with our partners.
Yeah.
Are you finding it easier for you now?
What I notice is that I really listen to myself more.
Yeah.
With many decisions. I'm like, how do I feel about this proposal, this invitation, this date, this, you know, this touch?
Yeah.
How am I feeling? I'm asking myself this constantly now. And it's really been transformative for me. because sometimes your mind is thinking something else. It's like the old programming that's just churning in your head, but your gut is always authentically telling you what you actually need.
Yeah.
So I read that the gut is like your second brain and it has as many neurons as a cat's brain. I thought that's the craziest thing I ever heard. But it makes sense because you feel in your gut like these very visceral emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to them, your life just becomes so much more easier and more peaceful because you're able to be guided by a more internal sense that's not like the programming in your head that's just trying to please and do what you think society wants you to do.
This school teaches some of the most deep and comprehensive skills and teachings around sexuality and tantra, right? I'm sure a lot of listeners don't know much about it. So would you describe it for the listeners, what the school is in your own words and experience?
ISTA is called International School of Temple Arts, and it is a training in which a group of people come together and they learn how to better relate to each other and to themselves. So we learned about how to communicate better with each other. We learned some really great things about communication, like even this tool called RBDSMA, which I use a lot now. And it's a way to establish how you want to interact in an intimate way with someone that's really clear. Like R stands for relationship, B is boundaries, D is desires, S is sexual health, M is the meaning of the relationship, and A is aftercare.
Yeah.
I really thought that was so useful because sometimes I feel like people jump often into passionate or intimate situations without any communication, and then later on you're like, oh, but I thought we were gonna become boyfriend or girlfriend. Oh, but I'm sorry, I have a husband. Oh, but you know, you know, things like this.
Yeah.
And that was very useful. We learned how to let go of emotions. There was emotional release tools that I found were extremely helpful, like how to bring out emotions from our body when they're intense, how we can have boundaries, which was very important, which we already talked about, how to be present with others and hold space for others, how to share energy just by eye gazing. And then there was a secret finale, which I keep secret because they like to maintain the mystery. But it was also very profound.
Has it changed your perception of sexual energy in any way?
Yes. I definitely experienced very profound, I would say, magical things at ISTA that blew my mind. What I mean by that is sexuality is definitely not contained to our genitals. Mm-hmm. We are these incredible sexual beings and it's like electricity and energy that extends beyond our bodies.
So many of my limiting beliefs about relationships and myself completely broke as I'm learning more and more about the potential of sexual energy and how powerful it is and how also beautiful and free and in our bodies and outside of our bodies it is. With all of these new learnings, I would love to hear from you more about love and relationships, if this is something you're open to talk about.
The first thing that comes to my mind is, of all the things that I've explored and that have transformed me in the last couple years, all of these things help you to find better love in your life because you're loving yourself.
I
mean, if you're able to communicate what you really need, if you're able to listen to your heart and listen to your body about what you really desire, if you're able to create boundaries with people so that you don't waste your time and your energy in situations that don't serve you. All of these things add up to allow you to be in the position to not only feel incredible and vibrate at your highest, but also to find someone who is aligned with you. Yeah. In the last couple years, when I look back at myself, I really grew a lot in those ways. Like, if there were times where I wasn't able to express what I really wanted, and if I can't express what I really want in a relationship, then how can the person decide if they're the right partner for me, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But I wasn't able to communicate that because I wasn't feeling worthy of communicating, because I was just trying to people please or shape shift myself into what I thought they wanted. But I think that this is really bad to do that. It's best to just really find yourself, know who you want to be, and stand true to that. And you will always end up finding someone who's going to align with that. It's just to have the faith to be alone until you find the right match.
Yeah.
I think that the two partners in the relationship should be open to growing, always growing, always learning, and always being open to transformation. Because if one person is doing all the shadow work and the other isn't, then I think that the relationship will break at some point.
I've been reading and hearing from you your new and ever-evolving way to work with role, to work with energy, and also your view on the industry also evolving and developing as Shibari becomes way more popular. What do you see is happening now with Shibari?
I see that Shibari is becoming more popular, and in some ways, I like to see that it's gaining more mainstream attention, because I would like it to be less stigmatized. But on the other hand, I feel anxious about seeing people get into Shibari, because Shibari is very dangerous. And I don't think people realize the danger in practicing rope. And when I learned Shibari, I learned it in Japan with a master who was very hard on me. And he spent about 5 months of him drilling like certain harnesses, like takate-kote, over and over and over again, with a timer, with his assistant, making sure that I did not make one mistake. And it seems brutal, but I have, in the last 6 years of doing Shibari, never caused anyone nerve damage or any sort of physical damage to their body. And I think it's because he was so stringent on perfectionism. And I really dislike to see people doing Shibari without actually giving it the respect it deserves, because people's bodies, which you are tying, creating art with, creating these, you know, emotional moments with, are delicate and they deserve that respect. So I see a lot of people who are doing Shibari in a course in like a week, and then they're teaching it and they're training people, and this is not Shibari. I'm sorry. Like, Shibari is something that you really dedicate your time to for months, even years, until you can actually do these suspensions safely. So yeah, that's what I see lately. And frightens me is that I'm afraid that someone is going to hurt somebody, and then it changes the perception of Shibari for everyone.
And I see that too, you know, and that's why I made a conscious choice to only work with you as long as you wish to work with us. I honor integrity of teachers very, very much. And I can see that that unfortunately happens in any industry, or with any philosophy or with any beautiful practice that people adore and then want to take on. Because most people have this thing of instant gratification. People want to learn fast and then do things right away, and they want shortcuts. So it can happen with Tantra as well. Like, you say, all right, I want to have full body energetic orgasm, and then I'm going to find the fastest way to do that. What can happen, and the danger that can happen even with, let's say, energetic orgasm, you can get yourself into such a deep space where you freak out and your body can't handle it. And if you don't have the right ways of and the right safe ways of then soothing your nervous system, things can be altered, or a certain level of fear can be embedded into your body for a long time, especially if you're mishandled by an inexperienced teacher who pushed one into such experience without even seeing they aren't ready. Similarly, in Shibari, I can imagine, the rope, it can be really painful. The difference between people who are learning and your touch is huge, right? I could never feel any sort of pain or any sort of like mishandle with a rope when I'm with you. But then when people learn, and people learn in a safe context with us, I can still feel like, oh, here's a bit uncomfortable, here's a bit painful, here the rope slid down my hand a bit too fast. And I can imagine if that was actually accelerated, I could definitely damage myself with people who don't have enough experience. But then I'm also hearing things from people who are learning, oh, come on, like it's, I had like this other course and I can just do it like now quickly. And I'm like, no. I'm definitely not comfortable with someone who has this false confidence in them because they took like a week or two course. It can be really dangerous, and I can so feel it. Therefore, I respect you for sharing these kind of concerns openly. I think people need to hear it. I respect a level of a master that needs to be in place before they can teach others. Having said that, would you share more about the tantric approach to Shibari?
Tantric practices allow people who want to learn Shibari or to experience Shibari to prep their mind and body to surrender. So, for example, having more body awareness by doing breathing techniques allows someone to drop into a scene. Like, for example, on Saturday, I did a show with a really wonderful girl named Mai that I never met before. A few years ago, I would never do that. I would never tie someone that I never met before. But at this stage, I felt very confident that it was going to go amazingly well. Yeah. And when I met her, we were in this room with hundreds of people. And she said to me, I'm nervous. And so I faced her and I took her hands in my hands. And I said, why don't we breathe together? And so we breathed together, holding hands. I looked into her eyes with soft eyes. And then I told her, it's just me and you and our breath, and feel my hands on your hands. And there's nobody else in the room but me, you, and the rope that's going to caress your skin. And she started to slowly drop into this somatic poem that I was weaving around her, where she was thinking about the feeling of her hands against mine and the feeling of the anticipation of the rope on her skin, and that it was just me and her. And it just switched her mind away from I'm nervous and there's a lot of people looking at me to how amazing all these sensations are going to be. And I think this is also a bit of hypnosis work, but it's like a mixture of bringing the mind into a certain mental state and also using breath and creating a bodily awareness really helps the person get into a mindset that allows them to really surrender into the rope. And so that's why I'm interested in Tantra, because it allows me, not only me to have more body awareness, but also to provide a space for my partner to be there too with me.
It is such a gift when a person can actually give you that moment of soothing, of confidence, of this kind of safe container where someone just takes your hand and says, you're safe, in a way, in a different language, in any shape or form. What are your plans now? Where are you taking your work? What can we be excited about?
Deeper presence, more emotion. I want mastery. I'm passionate about mastering what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I want people to feel transcended when they're tied by me.
Yeah. When and where do you have upcoming shows or workshops that we can share here for people to get excited about and see you, maybe plan to see you?
So my next upcoming events are going to be in November. I have two in Paris and I have two in London. The one in Paris is called Paris Salon, and it's this incredible event based on the history of the Belle Époque and the strong feminist sex-positive women who created incredible parties, and I wanted to keep that vibe alive. And in London, I'm going to be doing an event with Feel, and yeah, it's going to be amazing to talk about Tantra and Shibari and how they're intertwined and why they are necessary to learn side by side.
And that's it for today. I hope this episode has left you feeling inspired, empowered, and more connected to your truth. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to subscribe to the Feminine Power Podcast and leave us a rating. If you want me to ask any specific questions to our future guests, please do leave us a comment wherever you are listening to this podcast, and I will definitely address them. Your support means the world and helps us reach more women with this transformative work. And if you're ready to experience even more feminine magic, I invite you to explore the Feel membership. Head to feelup.co/membership or find the link in this podcast description to learn more and claim your spot. Until the next time, keep shining your light, keep embracing your unique journey, and keep rising into the powerful human you were born to be. I'm your host, Maria Grinina.